And welcome back to another exciting episode of Extra Features Podcast. Today we have a crazy director who brought me another film. It has nothing to do with his first film, but that's okay. I like this one too. Rene Perez's new film or old film. What's new to me? Cry Havoc is here. We're going to discuss it all. Thank you for coming on again. What's going on? I don't know where anybody is.
Well, I'm the B-movie guy, and nothing stops me. I just keep filming.
So let's start there for a few minutes before we get into the film. You live in California. How is filming? Can you film in California right now? I don't even know.
I don't think so, but I don't have television, so I don't really know what is happening in the world. I just go out and do my own thing. But I do see a lot of people wearing masks, and I know that there is a plague happening, but it's nothing that I concern myself with.
That's fair. I accept that. My job makes me wear a mask.
So. Yeah, I assume it's just some government takeover. If they can control your speaking and if they can control your breathing, they've got us.
That
so
is
I
true.
Just ignore the whole thing.
So how do you market your film then? You don't see them on TV. So I really want to discuss how you're an independent B filmmaker, no doubt about it. How do you market a film like this? I mean, it's just you.
I don't do any marketing whatsoever. The distributors do.
Okay.
I'm just the maker of the movie. Yeah. I know a lot of indie filmmakers have to do that now, but it's very inefficient because people who have whatever acumen for marketing are experts at that, and people who are experts at making movies don't have any kind of knowledge of marketing. So I'm not sure why they're interchangeable these days, but doing that means that you will just see movies made by the best marketed filmmakers with a talent for marketing as opposed to a talent for filmmaking. I tell all the distributors that I don't get involved with any of it. And they either take my movie or not.
I love that idea.
Do the work themselves.
Do you find you're always working with the same distributor or do you go with different distributors all the time?
Well, I try different ones every time, but they're all corrupt. They're all thieves and no good guys. You get your whatever money you're going to get up front, and then they cook the books after that. So all the distributors who are listening that I've worked for, I don't trust any of you guys. Sorry to say.
Hey, that's fair. I like this. At least you're honest. That's good.
Yeah, well, why not be?
So Cry Havoc is great. I love it. It's really, really phenomenal. It's intense. It's almost like a one-place situation. It's in Big Forest. Did you ever have thoughts of expanding this to a number two?
Well, Cry Havoc is fourth of the Havoc movies.
There's three more of these?
Yeah, before this one, yeah. Cry Havoc is the newest one, yes.
Oh, so you're just trying to confuse me. I didn't know there were four of them. I like this one. Okay, now you got seven of the other three. Okay, that's good.
Well, they're older, and the first two were heavily censored. I have to fight tooth and nail to get them not to censor these movies. And so I don't really talk too much about the first two Havoc movies. I only talk about the third and the fourth because the third one was released with a lot of work to make sure it was not censored, and the fourth one is supposedly not censored. I bought a DVD of it, but I haven't watched it yet. But I'm told it should not be censored, so we'll see.
Hold on. You had to buy your own DVD?
Yeah, these distributors these days are crappy. About 10 years ago, they used to send me boxes of, you know, like 20 or 30 DVDs. Now I got to walk to Walmart or Best Buy to get my own movie.
So, hold on. Your movie
just happens to keep safe.
Your movies are carried in big stores then. That's good.
Yeah. No, I mean, I'm making real commercial release movies.
No, I agree with you. I was just interested. I didn't know I could go into a Best Buy and buy one. I think that's awesome.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's usually where I go.
So how do you choose your actors? I mean, each film I find you have a different distinct look in the two I've seen. They don't look alike. So how do you choose who's best for your project?
Well, you know, I usually write stories around what I have and who I have. So if I have actors that are good at a certain thing and they're only interested in filmmaking and they're, you know, fun to be around or whatever, I write roles for them. So I'm like, hey, I met this good actor or actress in the last movie. They were really great. Let me write more roles for them in the future. And since my budgets are so low, that's kind of what I have to do for everything. You know, I can't write a scene with a tank if I don't have a tank. I have to write everything based around what I have in my hands or what the meager budgets that I'm given will allow me to purchase or rent. So if it's a new actor, I cast them based on whatever they're doing. You know, if I need a midget, I get a midget. If I need a big giant, I get a giant. If I need a beautiful woman, I get a beautiful woman. If I need someone to do drama, I will try to make the role non-descriptive so that the best thespian can do the role no matter what the person looks like. So, it's not like regular movie making where you could say, I need the perfect actor with a square jaw and muscular physique to do all these Shakespearean lines. Maybe Hollywood could do that, but B-movie world, you have to write for what you have. So, you know, in this case, I had a guy that looks like Charles Bronson, and I had a policeman role that I was thinking about putting in. So I said, okay, well, Bronson's in this movie then. So, and a couple of the actresses I've worked with before, one of them is in one of the previous Havoc movies. So, yeah, I just do whatever's best and whatever I can afford.
Okay, I was going to bring up the guy looking like Bronson, but he looked like Bronson to me the whole film. I kept thinking this was, I go, where did you find him that? You just knew this guy that looked like Bronson? I don't know his name, I'm sorry.
Well, about, I don't know how many years ago it was, but several years ago I was filming a TV episode in Spain, a cowboy TV show. It must have been like 10 years ago now. And I was filming in this big cowboy town set. And in that cowboy town, they had stuntmen and, you know, people you could take pictures with if you're a tourist. And one of them happened to look just like Charles Bronson. And I just couldn't believe it. And ever since I met him, I've been trying to get him into movies. Took a few years, but I've done about 4 movies with him now over the years.
So I want to go back to the what were you doing in Spain? You make your own films, and you're doing a TV thing in Spain?
It was like 10 years ago. They were doing a pilot episode of something, and they wanted an American director, but one that spoke Spanish, and I guess I was cheap enough.
Perfect.
So, yeah, but I was just happy to be filming in Spain where they had filmed all these great movies because the town sets were the same sets from The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly and all these old movies. So I kind of just went so I could film there.
That's awesome.
I didn't know I was going to come across this actor who looked like Charles Bronson and add him to my movies.
So when you cast Havoc, is it the same guy in every film?
Most of the time, yes, but there's been little instances where it's not, but I was hoping not to talk about that.
Okay, I won't ask anymore.
Yeah, but it's mainly one guy. Yeah.
I just wanted to ask how tall he was is where I was leading to.
He's about 6'5", I'd say. Very tall.
Okay.
Very tall, big, strong, stocky guy. So, yeah, he's just as tall as he looks. I wasn't exaggerating with his height.
Okay. And how did you get the mask? The look is what I was really after there. I was going to lead you next. The look of Havoc I love.
Yeah. Well, that mask was just something that we had made by an artist, a very talented artist. And over the years, his costume has changed a little bit, but just very little. But to me, I wouldn't be able to make a slasher movie unless he had a certain look that I thought would be worthy of going into the slasher genre again. And I'm very – one of the things I'm happiest with is is the way Havok looks, and I've tried to make him behave in a certain way that's not typical of most slashers. So he's almost there, you know, like Jason or someone, but he's got a little bit more going on, a little bit more psychopathy, I guess, inside his brain.
Now, when you design him, is it hot in that costume, or is there ventilation I can't see, but I don't see any?
It's hot, and my poor actor is just really going through it, but he's a big, tough guy, and luckily he's able to handle it. I wouldn't. I'd probably pass out, but he's a, you know, he's a big, strong, tough dude.
I know you always work on little budgets. I want to discuss, you film in a forest, I'm thinking, on this one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Now, do you need a permit for a forest, or you can just show up and do what you want?
Well, we did tell the police that we'd be shooting up there, shooting blanks and stuff, so that they wouldn't send the SWAT team. But when we filmed this, it was right after a fire. It's kind of what inspired me to even make another Havok movie. There was a huge fire, and I don't know if you saw this in 4K or hopefully at least HD, but
I saw it in HD.
Everything is black. Yeah. I mean, everything is black. The trees are charcoal black. The ground was black. It's the it's as if we had the biggest budget to destroy a forest.
Yes! I thought it was
ever
perfect.
In movie history, but... Yeah, well, that was just me taking advantage of a tragedy. You know, it was a big Holocaust that happened up here in my area, but very striking visually, you know, very striking.
And I also want to discuss, you have at one point in the film, they walk into a room of swords. It's very darkly lit. You meet the boss. I really liked what you did with that room. Now, I don't think the room really exists. I think you added things, or does that exist?
That was just a big warehouse, and that had a couple of shelves. So we put our producer had some cool knives, and we just stabbed them into the shelves and lit the place and, you know, smoked it up so it looked interesting. But I think it's mainly the lighting that you might have liked. But other than that, because it's pretty big and empty space. Or maybe it's Richard Tyson who plays the voyeur who puts all this stuff together. He's so interesting to watch, in my opinion, that he kind of steals the show for that entire time.
Oh, I agree.
Or the beautiful actress. You might have been staring at her, too. She's hard to turn away from. She's a beautiful and talented actress.
Well, I agree. I just like the set design. The more I watch films, the more I get into set design and lighting. I pay more attention to that stuff.
Yeah, well, that's what critics do. That's great.
It's kind of hard watching so many films a year, and then I have to start doing different things. I enjoy the film. I'm like, oh, what are you doing over here? That's what I want to know. So when you're shooting a scene like that, do you spend a lot of time in your lighting or not so much? I mean, I know you only have so much time. You're not a multi-million-dollar film. So how much time do you set up a shot?
I probably spend about an hour lighting the place. And, you know, after that, it's just a matter of tweaking the lights in between, like when I go for a close-up or if I'm going to do any camera movement. But, you know, when you don't do things through unions and you're just there to get the work done, you can move a lot faster. I don't have people standing around with clipboards and headphones. I mean, I always see movies like this. I'm like, what are all those people doing? With me, it's just me and my actors. So, you know... my actors will help me scoot some lights over or find a plug or run a cable. They'll turn the fog machine on for me. It's just us. And, you know, as you can see, we're making movies that, you know, they're not the biggest budget quality. But, you know, you've seen things like this on Netflix and stuff. And they're probably paying $10 million for all their stuff. But it's mainly just unions and lawyers and a whole bunch of crap that I don't get involved with.
So when you're writing a film, how do you do your pacing? I find this film's paced very well. I think the kills work on the level they're supposed to. I think you give the story plenty of time to develop. I think you do great cuts between stuff. So how do you decide? I mean, obviously you write a script, you have to cut it down, you have to edit it. Or do you do some of the work on set too on that stuff? Because you're saying, nope, this is not working. I'm going to change this, change the pacing, change the direction.
Yeah, I mean, the scripts are just guidelines for me, because when you're doing things just by yourself, just you and your actors, you don't have a team of people to coordinate with and make sure the set is this or the lighting is that, or, you know, there's a lot of things that change on the fly, and I just go for whatever's better. So if someone says, Renee, I can't say this line, could I say this? I say, do it. If it's, you know, coming out of from my keyboard to your lips is not translating well, let's change it. I just care about the overall theme and the subtext. It's mainly what I care about. So whatever gets my story to focus the overall theme or subtext the best, I go with whatever change needs to be. You know, but and you feel your way through it. You know, so many movies are made with diagrams and shot lists and storyboards. The movies mostly turn out looking like math because no one was feeling their way through it. And when you do a B movie, you really do have to be as artistic as you can, because that's all you've got going for yourself. You cannot compete with the spectacle of other movies that can blow up buildings and have flying saucers throughout their films, or have big budget casts. So although ours are the bottom of the barrel, cheapest horror movies or ever made, there is an artistry to them that shines through so that people can respond to that. So they're like, okay, well, they're not blowing up buildings and they don't have big movie stars, but they are making something artistic as opposed to making a paint by numbers, which is what you usually get, you know.
So being a director, and I mean, you must work with hundreds of new actors all the time, or looking at new actors and over the years, and they've come into your film. What direction do you give them differently than some of you've worked with before?
Well, it depends on their level of training. Some actors, like, for example, if you need a giant, you can't choose from 20 different giants. If you need a beautiful girl, you can't choose. Well, you can. There are so many. But sometimes you have the right person who has the right look, but they don't have the training. So you have to micromanage them. Other people are so good, like Richard Tyson. I'm like, let me just stand back and let the man do what he does, because I'm sure his input would be helpful. If I had the money to pay him and rehearse with him for a month, I'm sure his input would have been something that I applied. So I let him do his own thing until I reach a point where I say, oh, no, you can't say that because that'll change this, or don't do this that way. So basically with really good actors, everyone's going to hear this and know my secret, but with really good actors, I let them do their own thing, and I only alter them when I need to, if they're going in the right direction. With actors who might be new or whatever, I might have to micro direct their performance.
Now, do you find
it's different for everyone?
Do you find that difficult to micromanage somebody? Would you rather just let them go, okay, get this? I told you three times now.
Well, I don't get upset with people because I know that they might be nervous. I did have a couple of actors in this movie who were new, and they were getting killed, or it could have been one of the girls who were naked. So I don't know whether they're nervous about just being in a movie or being naked or having a big effect go off on top of their bodies, like a blood pump. So I do, of course, if I could choose, I would wish to have the greatest actors that have trained with me for a month to do the role. But if I have to micromanage their movements, I'll certainly do that, and I won't blame anyone for a bad performance other than myself when it's all said and done.
So I do want to discuss, I mean, you have a lot of head explosions, and I know you use a lot of practical effects.
Only practical effects.
Oh, okay. I knew that from last time. See, I remembered. How many heads do you bring of one person to be crushed or blown up? Is there just one, or do you have five? Or
we only have usually one because they're pretty expensive. So every time a person's head gets chopped off on the halfway point, or someone gets their jaw ripped off of their body, it's one time. You know, and what I do is for those in the slasher movies that require a lot of gore effects, I'll film the entire movie minus the little patches of gore, like a head getting ripped off or something. And then I do that at the very end of filming, and I make sure that we've got everything before that and after that, and only am I filming pieces of, you know, body destruction happening.
See, all these little tricks I'm getting out of you. You're going to get mad at me. I love the burnt car, how you used a burnt out car, which I'm sure was just on the side of the road from what you told me in the fire. But what a great idea to use that car.
Is it the one where the girl hid in?
Yes.
That car? Oh, yeah. Well, my producer found that he and I were just location scouting, driving around, and he kind of saw it buried under a layer of black ash, and I was like, I can make a whole sequence in here. So, it was a very heart-pounding, scary thing to be trapped in there, but it kept her safe from the bullets. Who would have known that Havoc would have come along and tried to get in there with her?
Now, you also have a car scene where a car gets shot up, and the tires go out when Bronson's car comes.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Now, the car shows, how does that work? I mean, they're shooting blanks at the car, and you're just puncturing them off thing? Like, you're shooting them at the same time, obviously? Or you just have something to deflate them?
You know, I don't even recall how that shot looks at the moment, but I think we just shook the car at the same time as they were firing the blanks at them. I don't think we actually sliced any of the tires or anything. That's way out of our budget.
I thought, that's why I like to ask these questions. You're very genius the way you do things. So I always like to ask. I did have a question. Your lead actress at one point picks up Havoc's axe.
Uh-huh.
Is it the same axe that Havoc uses in the film or a different one? Because she seemed to have no problems picking it up. And it looked lighter.
In that movie, he never used that axe. He has a hatchet type thing that he uses.
Yes.
For the most part. And he used a sledgehammer, I think, a couple of times. But I think in that movie, she just picked up one of his random tools that he left. And we assume it's Havoc because it's got a whole bunch of hair in it and teeth. But we don't, I don't know who else it could have belonged to other than Havoc. So it was his, although we've never seen him use that particular axe.
Now, you discuss a lot of time your producer's with you. Now, is he location scouting, this and that? I thought you being the director, you would do that alone or by yourself. Do you normally you bring the producer with you?
I normally am by myself. But, you know, this is an exciting thing, and sometimes people want to go and they want to be a part of it. And I don't say no, you know. But 95% of the time I'm by myself. And 95% of the location scouting for Cry Havoc, I did do by myself. But, you know, if someone goes with me, it's great, you know. Get a different perspective and get some input. Yeah. Plus, I don't have to drive so long by myself.
Yeah. I remember last time you told me, I presume you created the music again for this one?
Yeah.
Now, how do you know? I mean, you've written the film, you've directed the film. How do you know I need what kind of music to put in here? Where does that creative genius come from?
Oh, well, you know, sometimes when I'm filming the movie, I will have a scene work out in a certain way, and the melody hits me. In that case, I just, on the way home, I say, don't put on the CD, don't put any music on. And I try to remember the music until I can get to a piano. But sometimes it doesn't come to me until afterwards. And sometimes it comes to me before I even make the movie. I start doing music and I say, this movie is going to look like this music. But most of the time, it is a case of while I'm filming, a music will come into my head, and then I'm like all day trying to remember what that music was so that I can go home and you know, reverse engineer it on the piano and try to figure out how to make it into a composition. I don't recall on Cry Havoc exactly what I did, but I did, you know, the horror movie trope kind of big drum sounds. But I also wanted to do some classical style music because the voyeur says that he sees Havoc as some kind of a pure human. Like he compares him to Beethoven, how when Beethoven would create music, it was heavenly, and obviously something like very few composers have ever done. Probably two or three who could even compare to Beethoven in the history of the earth. So he sees Havoc as this pure form of nature. And I thought it would be interesting to put, you know, some kind of sonata, piano sonata. Not that I could play Beethoven. Maybe I could play Forelis or Moonlight Sonata, something simple. But my musician skills are not so high where I can play Beethoven. But I can, my composer skills are much higher than my musician skills. So I can compose music pretty much any style that I like. And I wanted to have that type of beautiful music while Havoc was doing his crazy thing, because I thought it would be interestingly juxtaposed, because the locations are beautiful, the girls are beautiful. You might see a beauty in the design of Havoc himself, so I went all out. But of course he's doing such horrible murders. So it's a different process each time with how I do the music.
Since I didn't know this was your fourth film, I'm going to ask a question about that. Is this your most successful franchise you have going?
Yes, Havoc is the most loved thing that I do. I get a couple of emails sometimes when the movies are not new. I get a couple of emails a week. If it's brand new, I get a couple of emails a day. I get more love and questions about Havoc than any other of the 20-whatever movies I've done. I've done 26. And the four Havoc movies are the only thing I'm sure to get mail from people on a weekly basis.
So this may be a hard question for you. After you're done filming, how much do you have to edit? Not so much scenes, but length. Do you film a little bit extra length, saying, okay, I'm going to cut probably 20 minutes out of this? Or you're very tight, and you go, I'm filming an hour and a half. It's going to be an hour and a half film. I got what I need. I'm not going to need to edit much.
Right. Well, I don't edit things out usually, unless it's necessary. Like if it doesn't flow or something, or if there was a bad take or something, then I'll edit it out. But every minute is so hard fought when you're a one-man crew and you're competing with $10 million movies. I couldn't do any extra, you know, 20-minute deleted scenes. I would love to. That would mean that I'm in a great place where I can discover and I can try new things, but not in the world that I inhabit now, not in the business model that I have. I can't do that.
So being a one-man crew, do you have a very tight film schedule? You start at 9, you finish at 5. Or you say, we're going to film for these 7 days. This is what we're going to do. We got to get this done.
I try to go no more than 4 days in a row and then take a day off. Because I've got to back up all the footage. I got to back up all the sound. I have to catalog it all. And then plus, I have to make a separate copy because, you know, if something happens to my one hard drive. I mean, I've got hours and hours of stuff. So I give the actors a day off usually. And I just get to it. You know, I just sit in front of my computer. And usually we're sunburnt and exhausted by the time that day comes around that we could probably not even have gone on. But there are some days, some film shoots where I've had to film, you know, for weeks in a row. And it's really, I'm sure it took some years off my life. And I wouldn't like to repeat that again.
Well, that's good to hear. Are you ready for some fun questions?
Sure.
Since you've already been on the show, you got all the normal ones. Now we're going to the weird ones.
Okay.
Your favorite snack food?
I just eat whatever my wife gives me.
Oh, that's a good answer. Since you live in California, do you have a favorite weather, or you just like it sunny all the time?
I love sunshine. I love 110 or 120 degrees. I'm Hispanic, where people of the sun love to cook in the sunlight. But I also love rainy days so I could listen to The Cure and be depressed.
Now, you have friends that come over, maybe myself and some other people, we want to watch a film at your house. What film would you put on for us?
You mean one of my movies or just a movie that I like?
A movie you like. I mean, we're going to watch all your films anyway. We're going to presume we've seen them all.
It depends on the crowd, but if it's my favorite movies are Star Wars and I guess I would put on Empire Strikes Back or Wrath of Khan or The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly. Those are my favorites.
You can put Good, Bad, and the Ugly on anytime I come over. So tell everybody where they can find your great new film, Cry Havoc.
Oh, Cry Havoc is out everywhere. I mean, you can get the Blu-ray. I always tell people to get Blu-rays. And I think the Blu-rays are only at Amazon. But it's streaming also on iTunes. I don't know what the deal is with the stores. I don't know if stores are open or Best Buy. There's this whole government takeover happening. I'm not sure what's the deal.
They are open, just go online. The stores are open. I will answer you right now. They are in Canada. Some of them are. Most of them are. Pretty close to all of them. Yes, you can get it in the stores. If it exists in the store, you can get it.
But it's anywhere you buy DVDs or Blu-rays or wherever you download movies to stream or whatever. It's all anywhere. And you could find it at... Or you can just go to my website, The Darkest Machines. There's also a Facebook page called Playing with Dolls Movies, and it has information on all of the Havoc movies.
Well, I thank you for your time, as always. We always have great fun. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Hey, I just want to say thank you for listening to this great interview. We have more on our website at www.extrafeatures.ca. And if you enjoyed it, can you please go to iTunes and leave us an iTunes review and like us on our Facebook page? Thank you.